The mystery of life isn't a problem to solve, but a reality to experience. Konnichiwa, minasan, it's Gray from Akazashi's Tea House over in Japan. How are you doing? Are you good? Are you genki? Oh, just got back from the planet Arrakis, Dune Part 2, and trying to get my thoughts into some kind of order, but I thought, hey, what the heck, let's just start recording and do a bit of a stream of consciousness post-movie reaction review. I thought about going live, doing it live, but you know what? I just thought, no, I'll do a short one and record it and then just drop it and see how we do. So, first things first, did I enjoy the movie? Come on. Yeah, it's a visual spectacular. It's a visual experience. It's almost a psychedelic experience at times. There was a moment afterwards where I went to the nearest mall to watch it. Not a massive screen, but a pretty big screen. And I'd come out of the movie. I was walking through the supermarket area of the mall in a bit of a daze, just kind of looking around, thinking, do I buy some spice? Some spice, some magic, something like that. Do I get some alcohol? And I almost got a bottle of water because of the importance of water, you know what I mean, in the movie. So yeah, bumped into a couple of co-workers, a couple of foreign teachers who are living over here as well. And yeah, I just said, I didn't know what to say. I was just like, hey, how you doing? Just been to watch Dune Part 2. I don't think they understood me fully because they're British like me and I didn't pronounce it Dune. I said Dune, so maybe that's where I lost them. But anyway, I just said, well, I'm kind of still high from the spice. And they looked at me like they didn't know what I was talking about. But anyway, that's how I feel. Still kind of visually, sonically blown away by the majesty of the look of the movie, the sound of the movie. But also, I'm not saying it's a perfect movie. There are things that I wasn't sure about, things I thought could have been done differently, maybe better. I would have liked a little bit more focus on the book, on the source, because I'm a huge, huge fan of Frank Herbert's Dune and Dune Messiah. I've read the first book maybe, if you count actually just reading physical copy, I've read a physical copy 3 times, digital copy once, that's 4, and I've listened to the audio book, a really good audio book by the way, 2x, so it's how much I love this movie, this book. As you can see, my mind is still like out there, but what to say, which you haven't heard already. It opened in Japan 2 weeks later than everywhere else. It was actually out last Friday, which was the 15th, is that right? Friday the 15th of March, 2024. I didn't go straight away, I was busy. So I went today, because I had a rather fortunate day off. It's Thursday, March 21st here, and I'm recording this at 5:38 p.m. in the evening. I went to see a noon showing. There's only 2 subtitled versions and there's 2 dubbed versions. I want to hear the original voices, so of course I go to the English with subtitles. Seeing the Japanese subtitles in kind of cool kanji as well that they do for a lot of these sci-fi or fantasy movies was pretty awesome. But yeah, I kind of lost my train of thought here, but so happy to finally see it. And I know you've seen many reviews, maybe you're tuning to me to get my take. So what is my take? First of all, the things that are really, really good about the movie, and it goes without saying, the visuals, the practical effects, the practical locations, the scenes that they shot, just looks gorgeous. One complaint I had with the first movie was how kind of bland and grey, almost grey or plain the sand looked. It didn't look anything like David Lynch's flawed, completely bonkers 1984 version. But in this part two, I thought they'd done that on purpose. They changed or added some gold, some golden brown, some color, some spice, some turmeric to the sand. So it looked much more beautiful. It looked more impressive. It was more golden. Loving the shots where you see the spice twinkling in the sand, you know, when it's mixed in. Also, there's a great shot early on where you see Paul eating some Fremen food, look down in his bowl, and he's like, wow, you know, there's spice in the food. And you can see these little twinkles of golden color in the food. Things like that. I love little attention to detail. So along with the cinematography, the location shooting, which is, you know, gorgeous, the CG, the way they've mixed in the CG with the practical effects, it looks flawless. It really does. You cannot tell you're watching, computer-generated images. It just looks like, wow, there's an ornithopter just going for it. Or there, what is it? There's a spice mining contraption, a spice mining machine. Just looks incredible. So yeah, they look very real, very, very impressive. Costuming is very cool. Continuing the visuals, I love the mix of the Fremen where you've got the still suit and the kind of desert wear of the Mujahideen from, I got like flashbacks to Lawrence of Arabia, the classic David Lean movie, the way they've got the long flowing garments, the wraps and things. So there's a nice mix of that in the costumes. Wasn't quite sure about, where are we over here? The Jessica, Paul's mother's costume, after she changes and becomes the Reverend Mother on the planet. She's got like, I think she fell asleep drunk and someone wrote some graffiti or wrote some like nonsense words on her face and no one told her. I guess there were no mirrors on Arrakis, so she couldn't tell, but yeah, I know I'm being silly, but looked a bit weird. I preferred it before she was wearing that. The Harkonnens look crazy, look weird, gothic, bizarre. There was definitely more of a push from Villeneuve to echo or maybe pay respect to David Lynch's strange, macabre, what's the word? I want to say gothic, but it's not gothic. There's another word I can't think of. Yeah, the version of the Harkonnens, very, very strange, weird, bizarre, creepy. I liked it. Again, it goes without saying, if you've seen the trailer, if you've seen the movie, the worm scenes are incredible. Absolutely incredible. The way they build up the tension to the worm's approach. You see the sand vibrating, the sand smoke, the mist rising, sand dust, the sandstorm is coming. It's like a mini sandstorm coming right at you as the worm approaches. Just looks brilliant. The worm riding scenes are just, again, next level. I got chills going up the back of my spine. Electrifying, as John Travolta said in Grease, but yeah, really, really impressive. I was reading a bit on Wiki about how they filmed that, and Timothée Chalamet was saying he believed his main worm riding scene took 3 months to film overall. And they did a kind of mix of course, it's CG, but they built parts of the worm. They made a practical platform for him to be on, and they blew loads and loads of sand into his face, of course, with wind machines. So it just, that is real. It looks real. I love the way they were going. You keep thinking the worm's going to dive. If it dives deep, he's had it. So the worm riders must have some kind of control. You're not quite sure if they are. Are they slightly? They must be guiding the worms because they, later on in the worm riding scene, you see Paul manipulating the weird skin flaps of the worm, and it turns to avoid big sand hills or sand dunes. So yeah, very, very impressive, just gorgeous to watch and very, very exciting. Of course, the scene near the end with the big battle where you see them all, there's like, I lost count how many, it could be six, seven, eight worms just riding towards the Harkonnen's base, which was the Atreides' base, had taken over it, Oh my God, what a scene that was. So the final fight is very, very impressive. Again, it looks very practical at times as a big focus on practicality, on visuals that look and feel and sound real. You never feel like you're just watching a game, a really impressive video game like you do with modern Star Wars or modern Marvel. Not all, but a lot of the modern Star Wars and Marvel movies just looks like an extended cutscene, to a really good video game. But this, I don't know how he's done it. Again, it must have been the decision to really put a lot of practicality into these scenes. So, waffling on, what else to talk about? The cast largely very good. Timothée Chalamet, I think, is better in the second half of the movie, especially after he drinks the water of life and has the change. He changes, kind of, gets his whatever third eye opened or however you want to call it. After that, he's a different person. He plays it differently, and that was more impressive. Until then, he's just kind of like, yeah, Willy Wonka, I remember you. And he felt very subservient to Zendaya, Charney in this, which is not from the book. There's a lot of like mutual respect in the book, but in this, he did feel like he was kind of like, trying to please her a lot. She's okay. I'm one of those people who don't see the attraction, don't see what the big deal is. She's better when she's playing it like nice, in a good mood, smiling. The second half of the movie, she seems like pissed off half the time, especially towards the end. And there are reasons for that, but she just looks grumpy and miserable and very moody, like storming off a lot. Yeah, not really taken with her.
How dare you?
Florence Pugh. She was good but underused as the Princess Irulan. Elvis Presley as Fade Rauther. You've got that right, because I'm just going off the top of my head here. I'm not checking any notes. He was great. There was a bit of the Elvis voice in there, but also it got better as it went on. Pretty intimidating. More intimidating than Sting in David Lynch's version. And a very impressive knife fight and an earlier mid-movie gladiator scene. Big fight, which was, it felt, you know, realistic. It felt visceral. It was brutal at times. Yeah, that was good. Good knife fighting scenes. I thought Paul had it, and it's like that in the book. You know, you think Faye's got him. You think he's going to kill him, but somehow he manages to survive because we have a sequel. We have a second. Sorry, anyways, it's really a third book, isn't it? Dune Messiah. It's officially the second book, I know, but Dune, the original novel, is basically two or three parts. So you could split it up as two maybe novellas. But anyway, Josh Brolin was fine, just kind of Josh Brolin. Is it Javier Bardem as Stilgar? I wanted more of him. You do get a lot of him in this, but he wasn't as impressive or kind of as I don't give a crap as he was in the first movie. He was very, what's the word? Not religious fanatic, but he was very taken with Paul, with believing he is the Messiah. That they really went down that pathway with his performance. He was fine. He was good. I liked him, but I preferred him when he was more independent and more like, you know, I don't give a crap what you think. I'm the boss. He was much more boss-like in the first movie. Dave Bautista. It was Dave Bautista. Again, hardly saw him. Shouting a lot. I like the part where he turned and ran. At one point, he just turns and legs it. Like, I'm out of here. You know, I thought he was supposed to be a mighty warrior, and he fled. He ran away, as they say. And who am I missing? As I say, I mentioned Rebecca Ferguson earlier as Paul's mother, Jessica. I liked her in the first half of the movie, but after there's a really good change, like transformation scene after she takes the Water of Life. That was really good. She'd said in an interview that was her favourite scene to act and shoot. She went full exorcist mode in it, so that was cool. But yeah, after she becomes the Reverend Mother on Arrakis, I don't know. There was one thing I really didn't feel was a connection between the characters, even between Paul and Charney. It's strange, you know, I didn't feel any kind of spark there. I don't know why. Maybe it was me. But I found that with Villeneuve's movies, they don't really grip you. There's not really an emotional pull. Don't get you in the heart, tugging the heartstrings like a lot of Japanese movies or, you know, good movies do. But maybe it's me. Maybe I just missed that. But that, I thought, was lacking. And the pacing's a bit weird at times. There are long, drawn-out scenes where you're just kind of gazing at the desert, which I love. I don't mind any of that. But some of the fighting scenes or the shifts were suddenly, they felt very sudden. You're like, oh, okay, we're here now, are we? And then we got to this bit. So, yeah. But I didn't worry too much about it being, you know, very accurate to the book. It did change a lot, especially with the way the relationship between Charney and Paul is portrayed. But yeah, I think that's about it for the cast. I don't think I'm missing about, oh, how could I forget? Christopher Walken is just old man Christopher Walken, who feels like he's walked into the movie from a different movie set, a bit lost, and no one's told him that he's in Dune Part 2. I saw some funny comments that he plays it with a Brooklyn accent, but no, he's not too bad. He just kind of seems a bit spaced out, a bit like, you know, oh, I don't really know what's going on. Imagine him like if it had been like 20, 30 years ago when he was in his prime. That would have been awesome. So what else to talk about? Hans Zimmer's score. Much preferred it in part two than did part one. I think there was a lot less of the old didgeridoo kind of going on, and much more impressive score with strings and, of course, horns. He loves his horns, doesn't he? Must be a very horny man. But yeah, I liked it, and I did sit through the end credits, which I always do these days. Something I never used to do before I moved to Japan, but I like to sit and just listen to the soundtrack and let the movie, you know, cook in my head, my heart, if I felt it. So yeah, it's a good score. I think better than the first part. Is it true that he who controls the spice controls the universe? That's the way the film opens. It's a great quote. And they speak it, they play it in Harkonnen, I think, the language. It's really weird. So at times there's a lot of Harkonnen language spoken, which I liked. And there's English subtitles above the Japanese subtitles for that, for those scenes. That was pretty cool. But yeah, okay, that seems to be it. I know I've waffled on for a long time. If you've watched to the end, I really, really appreciate it. Thank you. Just been checking the facts and figures on Wiki and the latest figures for the box office. It says here, as of March 19th, so that's, for me, that's 2 days ago, Dune Part 2 has grossed $210 million in the US and Canada and just under $300 million in other territories. So that takes it to $510 million. And according to Wiki, the Hollywood Reporter estimates the film needs to gross around $500 million, which it has, only to break even. That's just to break even. I thought this was going to do much bigger sales, but maybe it's too long for a lot of people, too highbrow, too weird. If you're not a sci-fi fan, it's a shame you're missing out because it is a cinematic movie. You know, it needs to be seen on a big screen. So that's about it. Thank you so much for watching this far. I do hope you enjoyed my stream of consciousness review. Trying to do a James Joyce, Ulysses, or No comparison, I know what we're talking about. But yeah, as always, thank you so much for your support. Shout out to all the Wakizashi Tea House Dojo members. You guys and girls absolutely rule and rock. I love you all. And for everyone who drops a comment or watches this, leaves a like, I really, really appreciate it. Do subscribe if you're not subscribed, and I hope to see you in a future video. This has been Gray from Wakizashi's Tea House, signing off for the evening. Mata ne.